For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome everyone. This week is the Haftorah for Parshas Kedoshim, and it's complicated. The real Haftorah that's listed for Parshas Kedoshim on page 1174 is almost never read. Usually the two Haftorahs come together, Achrei Mos and Kedoshim, and we, in that case, we read Achrei Mos. Achrei Mos, which is the one we're going to talk about, will technically could fit either week, last week or this week. Kedoshim would fit Kedoshim, but in some areas they try to avoid reading it. And some people have accustomed to read a totally different Haftorah. Let's take a look at it briefly, and you'll kind of get a feeling. The truth is, there are different customs, and I don't know, there's a small chance that Beth Jacob will end up reading the Haftorah for Kedoshim on page 1174, but I believe they're going to read the one on 1173. So we're going to go through the usual way on 1173, but I'll just show you on the Haftorah on 1174 what it's about. The Haftorah on 1174 is a rebuke. It's about the Jewish people. Kedoshim is about being holy. Holy is a hard word to explain. In some of the books where they talk about what makes a person holy, it's not what you would think. In other words, some people imagine that your holy means like you fast and you pray all day, and that doesn't necessarily make a person holy. Holiness means it's a person that's unique, and it's he's close to God because he imitates his ways. It means that that's the word kadosh means. Most people are selfish. They take for themselves. They worry about themselves. A person who's holy is a person who's giving, who takes care of others and gives to others. What's very interesting is that in the Parsha of Holiness, the very first mitzvah it talks about is how they treat their parents, whether they honor their parents, which is interesting. Like you might, a holy, you know, is he good to his mom? That's the first question. He's not good to his mom, forget it. He doesn't make it anywhere in the holiness books. It doesn't go that way. Like you can't be holy if you don't treat your parents who gave you life, you got to treat them right. You know, that's the Parsha. In Kedoshim, that's the very first thing. So this is a rebuke. One of the mitzvahs in the Parsha of Kedoshim is the mitzvah of rebuke. And it's a challenge for us because in our society, if somebody rebukes you, they are being nasty to you. You don't like that. Somebody tells you off. You assume that they are somebody who's out to get you, who's mean to you. Whereas we believe that when you care about people, if they're making a mistake, you tell them. It's like if somebody's driving and their tire is flat. So wouldn't you want someone to tell you, hey, your tire's flat, you know, this way it's not going to pop on you, or you're not going to drive and hurt yourself? Or if you have something that's wrong, you want someone who will tell you, who will. We believe that the next to the mitzvah of rebuke is the mitzvah to love. You know, it's you care about people, so you say something. The problem is that if a person isn't going to listen, so then there's no mitzvah to tell them, you know, to rebuke them, because the whole idea is to care enough to want to improve, to help people improve and fix things that are broken. But if they won't fix it, instead they'll get angry, so then the rebuke won't go anywhere. This is a rebuke on page 1174. It's one of the more strong Haftorahs. And in general, we don't like to be very negative. The Haftorahs always finish on a high point. If you see rebuke as a good thing, meaning that if you know your mistakes, you could fix them, so then the Haftorah is a good thing. It's a rebuke to the leadership. It's a rebuke to the people. If you look like on verse 7, the first thing it says is first it blames the leaders. Sometimes there'll always be people, individuals, that'll not be so good. but the leaders of the people, the great ones, you expect better behavior. So he says that the leaders were guilty. That's in verse 6. And then in verse 7, he says they didn't respect their parents. And then he says they didn't treat the stranger right, and they didn't treat the widow and the orphan right. They didn't care about the people in society who no one sticks up for. And it still exists in society that there are people who don't have a voice. There are people that are who need people to look after them, to care for them. That's really what it, that's what holiness is when you worry about the widow and the orphan and the stranger. And so that's the and then in verse 9 on top of 1175, he talks about talebearing. That was the rabbi called the Chafetz Chaim, went around telling everybody that you're not supposed to tell over things. You don't have to gossip. Like, you know, you heard, did you hear about so-and-so? What happened to them? You know, that's a problem. Now, in the end, there are a number of, Judaism stands for morality, for being, you know, for being loyal to one's spouse, for fidelity in marriage, and being against immoral types of things. That also creates a holiness. Our society now has become very open to immoral behavior. And it's, you know, you see it in the presidential candidates. It was always there, but they used to hide it. Like, you know, you didn't find out about JFK until after he died or he was gone. Then you find out what he was really doing. Clinton, you knew about all right away. Trump was bragging about it, that he was, you know, his morals and his and other people also. And again, that's not who we. Judaism is very strong on marriage and proper and. It mentions over here, like relatives, there's a tradition that there was a Jewish king that committed incest, just to spite. Like, just to go, God said I shouldn't do it, so I'm gonna do it. It's hard to imagine such a thing, but that was the king who Yechezkel was talking to. But at any rate, this Haftorah, like I said, I don't believe we're gonna read it. We're gonna read the one in Achrei, and let's take a look at it on 1173 at the bottom. And this is very interesting. When we grew up, they used to talk about black as beautiful after the 60s, when the black was a bad word. So that in order to build themselves up, the blacks would say, you know, black is beautiful, and black is... So this Haftorah begins, Halo kivnei kushimatem. God says, you're black to me. You Jews, you're like the Cushim. Cush was an Africans. That was an African nation. We're always the Cushim. So, what does that mean? God says to me, you're just like the blacks, Bnei Yisrael. So, let's continue on and we'll have a theory about it. Okay, so again, the Haftorah begins, Halo atem kenei Cushim atemli. You Jews, you're just like the blacks to me. Numashem, Halo es Yisrael, lisim eretz. I took you out of Egypt. And you were not the only nation that was freed. Plishtim mikaftur. I took out the Philistines. They also were enslaved, and they got their freedom from Kaftur. And Aram, and the nation of Aram, they got their freedom from Kir. Hine Hashem b'maloch ha'achata. Basically, some people felt that since Hashem took us out of Egypt, and Hashem cared about us, we can do whatever we want. We're the chosen people. We get a pass. Well, it doesn't work that way. And nothing in life works that way. Nobody can... your past is only helpful when it leads you to a better future, not when it's a person assumes because of their past they're going to get special treatment. So Hashem says, you think you're so special, and I gave you your freedom, that if you're not going to be worthy of it, then you can do whatever you want. Look at these other nations. They had their freedom, and they came and they were destroyed. And this is a prophecy to the 10 tribes. They had set up an independent kingdom. And what was unique is that none of the kings were good. It's very interesting. Like we all come from Judah. That's where we're Jews, from the kingdom of Judah. And they had good kings, they had bad kings. But the 10 tribes who were led by the tribe of Yosef, all of them were bad. It just sometimes if you set yourself up to make a divide amongst brothers, nothing good can come out of it. We believe that. Like, you know, sometimes you don't agree with everything everybody does, but you get along anyways because it's better to have peace than to, you know, than to fight and be a separate group. You're never going to have everybody agree on everything. And unfortunately, the 10 tribes split off, and they went in a bad way, and they went lost. Now, we're going to see only the country went lost. There were individuals from the 10 tribes who came back. But as a kingdom, it was bad news. So this, in a sense, why saying you're like blacks means that you, just because I freed you doesn't mean that doesn't place demands on you. I freed you in order to serve me and to be to do good things with your life, not to imitate the Gentiles, not to create a country in decline. So that would be the first way. There is this way that the black is beautiful way, that Cush, in the Middle East, most of the people in Israel were not black, and a black person stood out. And when it says that they were black, it means that you stand out to me. In fact, when Moshe Rabbeinu's wife, Tzipporah, it mentions that in one place that she was Cushi. And we know that she was from Midian, because it says that she was Yisro's daughter, so how could she be black? So Rashi says that she wasn't black, but she stood out. She was such a special person. When a person rises above their environment and is different than those around them, they stick out. They're just like a black person can't hide their skin. People that are very special and unique, they stand out. They you meet them in some places you go to and there's that person that shines. They just, you have everybody else, and then you have those unique people that are different. They stand out because they are so different in a good way. So here, when it says that you're like black, it means that you stand out. You stand out different. The Jewish people has to stand out. They have to be different than others. There's a different standard that we're judged by. And there are a few other examples where it uses that word Cushi to mean not that they were actually from the black countries, but that they were of a different type of person. They look different than others. They are different. And so we're saying two explanations. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if I should do that. I should just say one and stick with it. But I just want to let you know that there's two different ways to view it. One way is that you're just like the blacks that were freed. If they weren't worthy of it, then, you know, then you're not going to survive. You can't say, I'm your people and you can do whatever you want. It's never a ticket. Being chosen was never a ticket to behave and you have to be worthy of it. Or that you're a Cushim, that I expect you to stand out in your life. I expect you to be different than others. A lot of times we look around and we see what the Gentiles do and we say, it must be, it's not so bad. Look at all the Gentiles. Today, in our society, the things they do today, 20 years ago, nobody would have ever done. They just had today, they're making a big deal about the bathrooms in North Carolina. Yeah, so it's very, very interesting. The Torah mentions that a person isn't supposed to cross-dress. And it says that if people do it, there's a danger that they may use that to prey on people of the, you know, if men could go into women's bathrooms, then they might use it to take advantage of women. And we're talking about, you know, that's what Rashi says, you know, like this is 2,000 years old. And that's what they're arguing over, really. It's just common sense, you know, like that, you know, you want to create a new class in society and you're not protecting the existing classes. You know, you have to protect. If somebody's uncomfortable using a bathroom because of look who else is in here, that's just common sense that a person should have a right not to have to, you know. So if this class of people exists that need a separate bathroom, then let them create separate bathrooms. But what, you know, but anyway, that's, North Carolina is very unpopular right now. I don't know if you know, if you hear the way the news is talking about it, the Justice Department is suing them, or they're suing the Justice Department. It's on today's news. But, the idea, though, is it's not enough to look at what people around us are doing. We have to be better than the people around us. We have to stand out from the. We can't judge ourselves by what everybody else is doing. We have to try to stand out. We have to be different. So that's what Hashem says. And the reason Hashem took us out of Egypt is to be different. As Yisrael, Yisrael, Meretz Yisrael, who pleased by took out other nations too. Verse 8. Hinei, Enei Hashem. Hashem said, this government is gone. The government of the Jewish people, of the 10 tribes, the one that set itself up against Jerusalem. Now keep in mind, not only did they set themselves up, they wouldn't let the Jews go to the temple. Jews set up roadblocks, and they didn't let their fellow Jews go and worship in Yerushalayim. I mean, that was a terrible thing. And so Hashem says, I see what's going on over here. If you remember the government, they married foreign wives. Jezebel was the famous one, Izebel. That was really a bad, the 10 tribes just never, historically were embarrassed about it. That's why they didn't last. So Hashem said, and he's saying this prophecy to the 10 tribes. His life was probably in danger when he said this. He probably had to say it and go into hiding. So he says, Hashem says, that I'm getting rid of this government. Vishmanati Osa, and I'm wiping you off the ground. But even though I'm getting rid of the government, and again, Christians always do, they'll show you one verse, say, oh, God doesn't like the Jewish people. He says, I'm going to get rid of them. You read the next, you got to read the whole verse. Ki lo ishmenat, but I will never wipe out the house of Jacob. I will never wipe out Jews. It could be there'll be a government or a group that I don't approve of, but as individuals, as Jews, I will never wipe out the house of Jacob. That's what he says. Verse 9. But what is the plan? And again, we're part of this plan. And the plan is that Hashem says, we didn't do so well with our own country. We really didn't. In other words, when we ran the country of Israel, unfortunately, it didn't run so well in the end. In the beginning, there were times that it ran very well. If you read Josephus, you'll see what was going on over there. There were it was bad news. There were a lot of inner fighting. There was a lot of different factions killing each other, different kings. But he says, Kineh Anochi Mitzavi, Hashem says, I command, Vahana'osi b'kol agoyim. You Jews, I'm going to, he doesn't say that, he says, I'm going to spread you out amongst all the nations. El Beis Yisrael. Now, this didn't happen to most nations, by the way. In other words, most nations, if they're kicked out of their land, they go to nearby countries. Hashem said to the Jewish people, you're going to be spread out everywhere. And you think about this, when you travel, almost anywhere you go, you run into Jews. It's really somebody has a story that he was visiting the Vatican, and the guy selling the trinkets was a Jew. You know, it was like, do you want a cross? Or does he recognize a Brooklyn accent? You know, how many, you know, you just never know when you're going to run into somebody from our people. It just, I see that because, you know, I guess I look Jewish or a rabbi, so people will come over to you that, you know, they'll say shalom You just never know where you'll be, and somebody will pop out of the woodwork. They even have a word for that. I think they call that bageling. That's right. They have it's where a Jew shows you that he's Jewish. Like he sees another Jew, and he comes up and he'll say, you know, shalom, or he'll say something about because he wants to identify himself as a member of the tribe. But Hashem says, I'm going to spread you out, just like when you. Now, what's the purpose of being spread out? So he mentions that when you sift through flour, sometimes you get a few pebbles in the flour. Mm-hmm. It's the worst thing. If you have pebbles in the flour and you bake the bread, you could break your teeth. You don't want to swallow it. But when you think about it, the flour comes from a field, and the field there's stubble and there's so one of the things they do is they sift the flour. Mm-hmm. But when you sift it, you got to shake it up and down, and you move it around. And if you shake it really good, then the flour will go through the holes, and the stones and stuff will get trapped above, and then you get the good flour. So basically, Hashem is saying that when you go through the exile, you're going to be sifted, and the good people, those that are loyal, they'll cling to Hashem, and they will come out okay. But there'll be a lot of pebbles that'll fall to the side. Below Yipotzrov Arutz, but nothing will fall to the ground. Verse 10, Becher Yimusa Kol Chate Ami, and people will die by the sword, all the evil people, the wicked people, Omrim. And those people will be the ones who will say, Lo Sagish, that I can do whatever I want, and I don't have to worry. Vetatim, and the bad will never come. There were people who said it would never come. Now this Haftorah, again, is very much in line with our you always have to read the end of the Haftorah. There are parts of a Haftorah or of rebuke that are negative, but you can never forget the purpose of rebuke is because you have the ability to fix it, and that Hashem loves us and He wants us to fix it. So when he gives us this prophecy that the 10 tribes are going to go lost, he also is going to give us a prophecy about the Mashiach, that they'll come and, I'm spreading you around amongst the nations, but guess what? I'm going to bring you back. And again, we live in a time, you know, it's Israel's birthday. I think they said the population of Israel is over 8 million. Did you read that? It's 10 times what it was in 48. It's just incredible, the amount of people that have come back to live in Israel after all these years. So Hashem promises that even though I'm spreading you out and I'm sending you to all these countries, and I'm going to bring you back. And by Yom Ahu, now, one of the problems we had is we had bad government. Even today in Israel, it's hard to say that the politicians are our heroes. You know, we could do better. Like, we always feel like that we've had some... you know, I remember when we grew up, so, you know, like Ben Gurion and Golda Meir, and we used to pretend they were here. Now we know they weren't so great either, but that's like all politicians. But it would be nice. We long for like good leaders that are there to not to enrich themselves, but to make the. So we have a tradition that good leadership comes from David HaMelech, from the Davidic line. That's where the Mashiach's going to come from. That's the example of somebody that was, he led the battles. He didn't wait behind for other people to fight for him. He risked his life and he led the battles himself. By Yom Ahu, Hashem says, when the time comes on that day, I wish we knew which day it was, but hopefully soon, Akim, I will pick up. As Suk as David HaNofelos, I will pick up. So it's very interesting, this expression. Does anybody know what David Sukkah was? What's King David's sukkah? That's the temple, the Beis Hamikdash. The David was the one who had the dream to build the temple. The temple was called a sukkah because it was only temporary. It was a temporary house. It was Hashem was with us in a temporary fashion. It didn't last. But eventually Hashem will build the third temple that it won't be destroyed. And Hashem is telling us right now, you know, this country, you know, of Jews, it did not succeed. It didn't become what the Jewish people stand for. But there'll be that day when I will bring back the original sukkah of David, and that has no phallus, that's falling. And we have a song we sing on sukkah about this. Arachumanu yakim lanu asukis David hanofelis. That's the fallen sukkah of David. There's the expression that it's falling because in each generation there's a chance to bring it back. But we haven't yet succeeded. So Hashem says, don't worry, I'm going to bring Mashiach's going to come, and you're going to get the Davidic line back. And the goal of David was that the Jewish people be a place where Hashem's intense presence would be with, that we all be godlike, that we be worthy of having holy and having Hashem's presence on us. That's really what the parsha is about, being holy means we want to be unique in that we have this presence of God with us, that we take our godliness with us in our life. Humans have the ability to be animal-like or to be godlike, and we our goal is to be holy, to be like, you know, have Hashem. So Hashem says, I'm going to pick it up and rebuild it. Now, going through Holocaust and things makes a lot of wounds. There are a lot of things that are broken. There are a lot of people that are not whole, a lot of families that are not whole. So Hashem says, don't worry. V'gidarti es pitcham, I'm going to fix that. I'm going to fix up the holes, v'resi, whatever. I'm going to rebuild ubenise, and it's going to come back. It's going to be rebuilt. It's going to be better than ever. That's what he says over here in this verse, famous verse in verse 11, verse 12. Laman Yusha Sheris Edom V'kol Goyim. And the Jewish people will come back. And these other nations that had taken over their land, and Edom and others, the Jewish people will displace them. V'kol Goyim Hashem Yishmi Aleim Nu Mashem, and Hashem will do this. Okay, verse 13. Now, throughout most of our existence, it was difficult to make a living. It's not easy to. Wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to work so hard? You know, we all have to. Life is like throughout all generations, people struggle. When you think about it, like it's never been easy in life. Like there's been no society where everybody just picked the grapes off the tree and just took it easy and just had it. You know, like even the farmers, they got to wake up early in the morning and they got to go work hard and muddy and they got to milk the cows and they. Life is just a lot of work. So Hashem says, don't worry, the day will come when work will get easy. And things will be so bountiful that you'll be plowing, and you won't, usually after you plow, you got to plant, and then you got to water, and then you got to prune, and then you get to the harvest. He says that you won't even be finished plowing, and you'll already be harvesting. You'll have to call the harvester, the Nigash Chorus, they'll run into each other. And Vidara Chanavim Meshe Chazar, you'll be harvesting so many grapes that there'll be so much bounty, Vetifu Aharim, like the mountains will be dripping with wine. The Kolagvostims and the valleys will be like, there'll be like more food than, and more plenty than we know what to do with. That's the messianic picture that, the things will grow in ways that we couldn't have imagined. And by the way, some of that's coming true. We're able to grow things today in ways on the amount of land with the amount of the people. They used to predict in the 50s that the world would run out of food, and they didn't know that the technology would get better. They're able to produce as much food. I mean, they're trying to find things to make out of corn. They're trying to make gasoline out of corn and other, because we have so much, we don't know what to do with it all. But that's predicted in the messianic times. There'll be so much, there's plenty of food. Verse 14. V'shafti yeshu sam Yisrael. And I will bring back the remnant. I will bring back their Jews that are in captivity. Jews that are held in different, now there's spiritual captivity, there's physical captivity. Hashem says they're all coming back. V'shafti yeshvus ami Yisrael. And I will bring back the Jews that have been held. I mean, we all remember the Russians didn't want to let the Jews, they wouldn't let the Russian Jews leave. When we grew up, that was the big thing. The Russian, they would lose their jobs and they were refuseniks and they wanted to come back to their people and they wouldn't let them leave. Now they can come. Now, if they want to, they can pick themselves up and they can go to Israel. But Hashem says, "I will bring those people back, and they will banu arim, and they'll build cities that were destroyed." Again, this is happening today. You go to Israel; all the cities that they're building, there used to be cities there. They were previously destroyed cities. They're rebuilding them. The yeshuva and they dwell in notu kramim, and they'll plant vineyards. The shasu asyenim. It's interesting. Also, wine today is one of the major exports of Israel. It's doing the Israeli wine is like it's become one of the top wines. Even not forget about kosher wine. Israeli wines do very well. I don't know. I guess it's the dry climate but if you look like Israeli wines are, you're going to plant vineyards and you're going to have wine. Vasugagos, and you'll have all kinds of gardens. V'ochlis pereim, and you'll eat your fruits. Verse 15. Now, so we're going to come back. But, we got kicked out the first time, and we got kicked out the second time, so how do we know that when we come back, we're there to stay? So Hashem says, when I bring you back, I'm going to plant you there. In other words, when you say, I'm going to plant you there, that means you're going to take roots. We've had enough of the exile. When we come back, the final time, we're going to be Netatim Alamas, and we're going to be planted, and guess what? It's going to be our land. During the war years, there was a rabbi who was in Switzerland. When he was in Switzerland, he never would, most people go to see the Alps and they go to see the mountain. But when he went to Israel, he wanted to tour. He wanted to see. And they said, Rabbi, I don't understand. When you were in Switzerland, they had the world's greatest, the most beautiful, the Alps. And here, you all of a sudden, you're going to Masada, you're going to here, you're going to there. He said, yeah. He said, but that wasn't our land. This is our land. I want to see every inch of our land. We'll be planted on our land. That's part of the thrill to go to Israel, because you can go all over the world, but it's not ours. Israel is ours. V'lo yiznatshu, and you'll be planted, and you won't be uprooted again. Oh, me'ad masam, from your land, asher nesati lehem, that was given. Now, who's making this promise? So, Omar Hashem, Hashem says, but this is the important word, Elokecha, Hashem, your God. Hashem, who's our personal God. Hashem, who looks after us and who cares about us. And the same Hashem who said, I got to get rid of this sinful country. I got to get rid of this government. And you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have Holocaust and Inquisitions, and I'm going to shake you. And some of the stones got to fall out of the flower. But then I'm going to bring you back, and everything will be great. And that's the picture. And again, today it's not hard to see because we've begun to see it. Jews are coming back and they are rebuilding those cities. We're nervous because we hope to be worthy of it. We want to, like I said, we want to stand out. We want to be righteous. We want to, and then in the next Haftorah, like I said, it's a little bit more specific about being holy. And it's in the Parsha also, but the thing to remember, and again, is that holiness is not just about prayer, and it's not just about fasting and closeness to God. If you want to be close to God, you got to care for others. You got to be somebody that takes care of the widow and the orphan and the stranger and helps people that don't have a voice and need your help. And that's how we define holiness, is a person that is not selfish in the sense that they're only in this for themselves, but they're always looking how to benefit others and how to be part of the group.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.